Vaydaber Hashem el Moshe Lemar, Daber el Bnei Yisrael Lemar, Isha ki tazria v'yolada zachar v'tam'a shivat yamim ki mei nidat devota titma. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Tazria and Shabbat HaChodesh. Parshat Tazria, by the way, is always together with Metzora in a 12-month year, and Tazria Metzora in such case takes place after Pesach. In a Shana Me'uberet, a 13-month year, a year that has two Adars like this one, it is always separated from Metzora, read on its own, even though it's a short 67-verse Sedra, and it always takes place before Pesach. Sometimes it's HaChodesh, sometimes not. We'll talk about that, Bahem Sheikh, as they say. Recording. And first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 25th day of Adar Sheni, 5771, on the secular calendar, March 31st. In Israel, we change the clock to summertime tonight, really Friday morning, when 2 a.m. becomes 3 a.m. This is about 2 weeks later than it was in the United States and many other countries, but that's the way it works here. It is always it used to float and get decided each year when daylight savings time would run. The last number of years it's been fixed by a law, which of course is changeable, that it begins on the Friday morning of April 1st or right before, and ends on the Sunday morning, Motzoi Shabbat, Sunday morning before Yom Kippur. So it's interesting because if you look on a website with daylight savings time around the world, you will note that it has a secular date for when it begins and a Jewish date for when it ends. Therefore, it's a flexible number of days of daylight savings time. And it's constantly being argued here in this country, but that's the way it is. Of course, here, and as well as any Jewish community around the world, the most notable thing about switching to daylight savings time is the later starting time for Shabbat and the later out Shabbat. Of course, everything goes in the same way, later Sof Zman Kriyat Shema, later time to start Mincha, later time for Mincha, and it keeps getting later and later. But because we change on Friday morning, that first Shabbat tomorrow is always, last Shabbat candle lighting was 5:15, 5:18, whatever, and now it's already 6:22. So it's a significant jump that's very noticeable for everybody. I started to say before There's an ongoing controversy here about whether daylight savings time should be at all influenced by any religious considerations, because there is no halachic issue in it. You have to adjust when to daven based on sunrise and sunset and everything in between, but it really, you know, has no should not have an impact on a country's decision to put daylight savings time into effect or to stop it. It works out nice when they stop it before Yom Kippur, which divides the fasting a little bit nicer, where you have to start it earlier, but then the night comes and you go to sleep, and the daytime is technically an hour shorter than it would be if they continued with daylight savings time. There was a time when they did not change the clock to summertime until after the Seder, because the Seder becomes an hour later, starts an hour later, ends an hour later, than it would have if winter time still continued. But at least they got past that. Then there are all kind of arguments about slichot, but it really doesn't hold water, because there are advantages as well as disadvantages to having the extra hour or to taking away the extra hour at any given time, and people really have to adjust, and the decision should be made on first and foremost safety, and secondly on economic considerations, which have not really been proven or anything like that. It always brings to mind a quote I think I heard on a TV show from Sam Levinson himself of blessed memory, where he said his mother explained daylight savings time as cutting off the top of a blanket and sewing it onto the bottom to make it longer. That was the way he summed up daylight savings time. Whether you like it or not, here it comes in Israel in a number of hours from now. And that's the story. As far as the date, I told you already, the Shabbat, two Torahs, the first Torah, Parshat Tazria, seven people. The second Torah, the Maftir for HaChodesh, which I'll talk about in a while, followed by a special Haftorah for HaChodesh, which preempts the regular Haftorah for Tazria. That's the general way it goes. In addition, this being the Shabbat right before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, we bench Rosh Chodesh, which means we announce the upcoming Rosh Chodesh in the middle of the special prayers. The Chazan will announce Rosh Chodesh Nisan, Yihyeh B'Yom Shlishi, Haba Aleinu V'Al Kol Yisrael L'Tova. That Rosh Chodesh will be Tuesday. It's a one-day Rosh Chodesh, because the Adar right before Nisan is always 29 days in our fixed calendar. We'll talk a little bit about the calendar as well. I hope, because of its connection to the mitzvah of HaChodesh HaZelechem Rosh Chodeshim. And that's where we're holding. Let us, without further delay, say Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir Hama'alot Mima'amakim Kraticha Adonai. Adonai Shima V'Koli, Tihyena Aznecha Kashuvot L'Kol Tachanunai. Im Avonot Tishmor Yah Adonai Miya Amod, Ki Imecha Hasalicha L'Ma'an Tivare. Kiviti Adonai Kivita Nafshi V'Lidvaro Hocholti. Nafshi L'Adonai Mishomerim L'Boker Shomerim L'Boker. Yachel Yisrael El Adonai Ki Im Adonai HaChesed V'Harbe Imo Fedut. V'Hu Yifdeh Et Yisrael Mikol Avonotav. Achenu Kol Beit Yisrael Hanetunim Batzara Uvashivya Haomedim Bein Bayam Uvein Bayabasha Hamakom Yerachem Alehem V'Yotzieim Mitzara L'Yirvacha U'Me'afela L'Ora U'Mishibud L'Geula Hashta Ba'agala U'Vizman Kariv V'Nomar Amen. Now, part of my opening of the show lately has been the Jeopardy tune. I'm going to play it again because I have a final Jeopardy answer for you, and we will then give you time to come up with the answer, and I will give it. Of course, it has to be in the form of a question. The Final Jeopardy answer. The the category, Biblical Zoology. That's a misleading category, but we'll call it that. The answer is a cross between a carnivorous marsupial and an ostrich-like South American bird. Now you have to check your answers. You're right, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're wrong, you're right. Whatever. The correct Final Jeopardy question, what is Tazria? If you still don't understand that one, figure it out for yourself. What I'd like to do now is play a mini shear that I just gave the folders a very, very short while ago. And it will extend a little past the halfway point, but I think it has a lot to think about, and then we'll talk more and hopefully get some music in as well. But in the meantime, join us virtually at the folding tables down in the cafe area of the Israel Center on Rehov Keren Hayesod, where people are busy folding the last numbers of Torah Tidbits for this week, issue 950, Tazria HaChodesh Mevorachim, and join us for the mini shiur, and then we'll talk more. I have two things to tell you, maybe more, but let's start with one. We have a tradition that the Greeks, pre-Hanukkah, targeted a few mitzvot in their campaign to separate the Jew from his Judaism. They didn't have to do a shotgun blitz of all mitzvot, but they carefully and cleverly selected some mitzvot which are so crucial to the nation. One of which was Brit Milah, and one of which was Kiddush HaChodesh. Now, it does not happen every year. It happens only a little more than 20% of the time. I wrote that in Torah Tidbits. But this year, this week, this Shabbat, we have a coincidence. I don't mean coincidence. I mean a coincidence of Parshat Tazria, where you have Uvayom Hashmini Yimol Besar Orlato, the mitzvah to circumcise on the eighth day. And the maftir is Kiddush HaChodesh, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. So when the two come together, let me broaden the statement. Whenever two things coincide in Judaism, the calendar dates with Parshat HaShavua, sometimes it's not obvious and easy to make a connection, but it's always worth the effort. And it varies. Some don't. Hanukkah, for example, is always around Vayeshev and Miketz. I can't even say always there, because mostly Miketz is Shabbat Hanukkah. Occasionally it's not. Rarely it's not. But if it's not, it's the day after. So it's there. These sedras nowadays, depends on whether it's a 12-month year or a 13-month year. So Tazria is mostly after Pesach. Usually it's after Pesach. And usually it's together with Mitzora when it's after Pesach. It's separated in Shana Me'uberet, a 13-month year, and it's usually before Pesach. And there's something to say, but this connection shouldn't go without notice. Uvayom Hashmini Mol Besar Orlato is the individual's membership in Klal Yisrael. Remember that circumcision does not make the baby Jewish. Birth makes him Jewish, or conversion makes him Jewish. The Brit Milah is an entree to the Brito Shel Avraham Avinu, and it brings him into this membership of Klal Yisrael. And what other mitzvah also joins us together as part of Klal Yisrael? Korban Pesach, which is the main theme of the Maftir. Even though we call it HaChodesh, it's only the second pasuk. The first is just a Vayedaber Hashem al Moshe v'al Aaron Beretz Mitzrayim Lemor. The second pasuk is HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. And then the remaining 18 psukim of the Maftir all deal with Korban Pesach and the holiday of Pesach and Chametz and Matzah. And that, too, is membership in Klal Yisrael. So we're talking multiple connections here. And if I jumped from one to the other, excuse me. But you've got the only two mitzvot asei, the only two positive commandments, the non-fulfillment of which carries with it karet, which is some kind of death penalty from heaven. We don't know exactly what it means. It's spiritual. It's after this world, sometimes during this world, but it's the only two mitzvot asei, positive commandments, that are punishable by karet for non-fulfillment. I want to emphasize that. Usually, we make a very big distinction between the non-fulfillment of a positive command and the violation of a prohibition. Follow what I'm saying. Active and passive. In order to steal, thou shalt not steal, that's a prohibition, a person has to act. In order to violate the mitzvat asei of taking a lulav and etrog, a person has to be passive. He goes through the first day of Sukkot without doing something. That's a significant difference in Judaism called shev va'al ta'aseh, sit and don't do anything, as opposed to kum va'aseh, get up and do something. Generally, I have to say generally because there are exceptions, generally a prohibition is violated by an act. Generally, a positive command, by its nature, is not fulfilled in a passive way. And what follows in that wake is usually a much lighter punishment. Getting up and doing something wrong is punishable by a higher kind of punishment than merely letting something go by without doing it. The exception are Brit Milah and Korban Pesach, when we have it, where a Jew who intentionally, a Jewish male who intentionally goes through his whole life refusing to circumcise. Now this is a little tricky because at 8 days old, the person is not responsible for himself. His father is the primary individual who will help facilitate that mitzvah. But once a kid becomes bar mitzvah and is aware of the fact that he was never circumcised, he has an obligation to have himself circumcised. This is an obligation that continues until he does it. And if he dies without having been circumcised, not for health reasons and not for any other kind of reason other than I don't want to do that, then what he has in essence done is removed himself from Klal Yisrael, and the punishment fits the crime because the punishment is being cut off from Klal Yisrael. Similarly, Korban Pesach is a membership right of the Jewish people, and a person who has no good excuse, or even a bad excuse, a person who has no excuse for not doing Korban Pesach, other than, I don't want to do this, is punishable by karet. It's a little trickier because he can still repent till Pesach Sheni, and then he brings Pesach Sheni, and then he's not going to get Karet. Not the point for the detail. The point is there are only two positive commandments. The non-fulfillment, notice I didn't say violation, so the non-fulfillment of them, the passive non-fulfillment, carries with it being cut off from the Jewish people. And that's Brit Milah in the Torah reading, the Shabbos, first Torah, and Korban Pesach in the Maftir. So there's your connection. The other connection to the beginning of the Maftir of HaChodesh, I mentioned earlier, the Jews in the time of the Second Temple were faced by a persecution from the Hellenists who targeted Brit Milah and Kiddush HaChodesh as two of the things that are so fundamental towards the concept of membership in Klal Yisrael that they chose them and a very few others as their target in order to try to accomplish their goal of separating the Jew from his Judaism. So there's your connection there. Side point, or not really a side point. I wonder if women, actually I don't wonder because I know that some of them think about this, whenever I talk up Brit Milah, I imagine women saying, what are we, chopped liver? If you have an important mitzvah, pick it. Kiddush on Friday night, men and women. Hanukkah candles, men and women. Fasting on Yom Kippur, men and women. And none of those are on that same level of Brit Milah, men, not women. So, where does this, whatever, let me give you a little background to where the question first was posed to me. I started my teaching in Queens in a small school called the Heller Hebrew Academy, which had one class per grade of between 15 and 20 or 25 kids, boys and girls. And boys and girls were in class together, and I taught them Gemara together, and I had Mishmar with them together, because it was too small a school to even think about separating, even if they wanted to. Then the school merged with a larger school in a big building called Yeshiva of Central Queens, incorporating the Max and Rose Heller Hebrew Academy. Now the school had three classes per grade, 90 kids at least instead of 20, and boys and girls were separated for Limudei Kodesh. We'll be right back with the rest of that story and the mini-shiur that follows. Stay tuned. You've been listening to Torah Tidbits audio for Parshat Tazria and Parshat HaChodesh. We're right in the middle of a story, which is in the middle of the mini-shiur. Let's continue that, and afterwards we'll have more to say. I was given the task not only of teaching in the school, but of running the Mishmar program, optional voluntary program on Thursday evening of extra learning. And the girls who had been with me in Mishmar in 7th grade in the old school assumed that they would continue in the 8th grade. The school said, sorry, Mishmar is for boys only. So the first Mishmar session, we had pickets, a bunch of girls from the new 8th grade and whoever else they recruited to join, picketed the boys' Mishmar with me with signs saying, we want to learn Torah also. Now, when girls say, we want to learn Torah also, you got to do something. So I went to the administration, and I said, how about letting Mishmar be open to boys and girls? They said, nope. End of story. I said, okay, how about letting me take a different night and have Mishmar for girls? So the executive director says, all right, what night do you want? I said, how about Wednesday? Now, he confided in me much later that the only reason he gave his agreement to Wednesday night Mishmar for girls was he thought it would fizzle out as soon as they got permission to have it. What turned out to be was girls' Mishmar was stronger than the boys' Mishmar because not only was it optional, but it was optional. In other words, that's what appealed to them. So the boys, you know, mishmar is mishmar. So you go or you don't go. But the girls did it as a thing. So we had a wonderful mishmar. I really should bring down my tie to show you. I embroidered a tie that I wore every Wednesday, saying if it's Wednesday, there's girls mishmar. Anyway, the first session of that mishmar, I decided that we're going to learn Sefer Achinuch. And Sefer Achinuch begins with the two mitzvot, one from Bereshit and one from Lech Lecha, of Pru Uruvu, be fruitful and multiply, and Brit Milah in Lech Lecha. Even though Brit Milah is in this week's Seder of Tazria, its primary source is considered to be from Lech Lecha. So I presented it and took the two of them together, and for sure there was a girl who wanted to know, if it's such an important mitzvah, why just boys? And to compound the question, but at least to compound it in a way where you can answer them together, why, according to many authorities, is pru uravu, be fruitful and multiply, obligatory on men and not on women? Even though there is an opinion that says that it is. Now, there's technical reasons for it, but that's not what I want to bring up. So I'm not giving any kind of halachic explanation here. I'm giving a concept of why HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose the way he did. If Brit Milah would be so important to remove an extra flap of skin from the body, then we could have been created with a flap of skin on the tip of the nose, and boys and girls would undergo a ceremony at 8 days old to remove the extra flap of skin from the tip of the nose. But that's not the point. The point is the specific organ is the organ of reproduction, not at age 8 days old, but it's the potential for the future. And as the organ of reproduction, it ties in very nicely with the command of be fruitful and multiply. And what you have there is a partnership between male and female. Can't do one without the other, at least so far, even though science has probably tried otherwise. And therefore, you can look at it as mitzvot, two very significant mitzvot, that are really addressed to the combined unit of male and female, which become like basar echad, fused as a married couple. And the mitzvah in some way covers them both. I think it's symbolic when many weddings we go to now, didn't used to be like that, but the chatan puts on a new talit and he makes a shechianu. And at many weddings that I've seen, after he makes the bracha and puts on the talis, he spreads the talis over the kala as well. So even though talis is a man's mitzvah, not a woman's, this gesture at this moment that they are fusing together as a married couple, of combining them in this religious way under a talis, not just under a talis, but enwrapped in a talis, has the same kind of message. This is my own thinking. If a man has a beautiful etrog and a woman has a beautiful lulav, or any two people, doesn't have to be male and female, if each one has part of arba minim and they can only do the mitzvah combined, that's a practical solution. I'll let you use my etrog to make the bracha, and then you give me your lulav and the other minim, and I'll make the bracha, you know, for myself. That's a convenience. But if one person of the two, of the couple, has the mitzvah, then the other one, in the role of being part of, the woman being part of the unit, ishto kegufo, a woman is like part of the body of the man, it's the combined unit that has the mitzvah of pru ravu, it's the combined unit that has the mitzvah of Brit Milah, even though for the chatan it was done in normal cases way back when he was 8 days old. That's an idea percolate it and see what you come with it. That was Vehisha Amda from the Pesach Haggadah, an old passage, of course, but a relatively new tune, one that took Israel by storm, and I imagine much of the Jewish community all over. Shveki, I don't know if this particular version was his, but he's the one who made it popular. And it's a very melancholy tune to a melancholy concept that we have a sad fact of Jewish life that Paro, the villain and enemy of the Haggadah, is by no means the only one. We just celebrated Purim. Haman is not a unique individual either. Every generation, Om Dimoleinu Lechaloteinu, people arise to vanquish the Jewish people in every generation. That's the sad part. The good part is, V'HaKadosh Baruch Hu Matzileinu Mi'adam, and God saves us from their hands. Let me just go off a little on this topic. There are times where God completely saves us from harm, even though our enemies seek to kill and maim. There are other times where he allows a certain amount of success of our enemies, and we really can do not much more than shrug and say, God has a plan, God knows what he's doing, God gives permission for things to be done, and what we have to do is become better people, a better people. Those were two separate thoughts, better people as individuals and a better people nation as the total. And then our enemies will meet with less and less success until they are totally stymied by complete divine protection for the people of Israel without God allowing bad things to happen or orchestrating them. That's a whole discussion by itself. So Vehisha Amda, part of the Haggadah, we make a point of it by covering the matzah, lifting the second cup of wine, and announce that we have a promise from God that he will not allow the Jewish people to be vanquished, with the sad realization that we do get hurt from time to time. And this in the context of the telling of the story of the Exodus, which is why I called it melancholy in the first place. Okay, let's continue. The mini-shir to the folders touched upon, I think, two solid connections between the Parsha of Tazria and the Maftir of HaChodesh, both the HaChodesh part as well as the Pesach part. Well, let's take a look at some of the different things. First, let's go back to the Sedra. In addition to the description of birth and the process of ritual impurity and purification and then offerings of the Yoledet, the woman who gave birth in the Beit HaMikdash, which is the shorter part of the already short Sedra of Tazria. The rest of the Sedra and the bulk of Metzora deal with Nigaim. Nigaim are afflictions of various types on the skin and body of a person. And what emerges, even though it is not done and practiced today, is that there is definitely a connection between spiritual shortcomings and physical eruptions and manifestations with a connection. I often put it in an oversimplified way as follows. Imagine if we had a book, and the book had all possible kinds of injuries and illnesses and maladies and the reasons for which they come. And a person falls and breaks his arm, and he goes to the book and he looks under broken arm, and there's an entry under simple fracture, compound fracture, and left arm, right arm, whatever. And he finds exactly his injury. A clean break of the wrist, simple fracture of the left hand. And he looks it up and he sees that that is the punishment for a person who is not careful to say Birkat HaMazon after every meal. A person who remembers before Brachot and often forgets after Brachot. Well, if we had such a book, that would certainly be a wake-up call to the person who broke his left wrist, and perhaps it would lead to turning over a new leaf and more meticulous attention paid to Birkat HaMazon. Go on and on and on. This disease as a result of person speaking gossip. This disease as a result of a person embarrassing someone in public. This disease for stealing. This disease. We don't have such a book. We believe, although it's hard to believe in a concrete way, because we don't have such information, that there is a connection between what happens to people and how they behave. And disease and injury are supposed to be wake-up calls, even if we do not have a book that we could actually find a particular thing. We have to do some introspection, and we have to say there is room for improvement, and even if it's not connected to my particular injury, I will try to pay better attention to X, Y, or Z. We don't have such a book, but during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, we have Tzara'at, falsely, inaccurately translated as leprosy. That's why I use the other term in Hebrew, which is Nigaim, which is a generic term for afflictions. It could mean blotches, it could mean pimples, it could mean rashes, all kind of things, where a Kohen was consulted and declared, possibly, the person ritually impure, Tamei. That meant that the person had a shortcoming in his religious behavior, which manifested itself in this unusual physical way, and serves as a reminder and a warning to put his act together. This is not such a crazy idea if we think in terms of a simple analogy. It is well established in medical science today that there are certain physical manifestations which have at their root a psychological cause. Too much stress can manifest itself with certain specific physical problems. And the treatment of the symptom of the actual physical problem is not going to bear results like treating the stress or the anger or whatever other emotion is involved. That idea is just as an analogy to the whole topic of Nigaim, where we are taught what you have might not be purely physical. It might be a physical manifestation of a problem, and have it inspected by a Kohen. If a Kohen declares it tahor, ritually pure, not nega, not tzara'at, then you go to the pharmacy or you go to your doctor and he prescribes a salve for the rash and you treat it as a physical symptom. But the possibility that there is a spiritual connection to it needs the evaluation of an expert Kohen. Now, I could talk more on that, but I'd like to quickly move on because we're running out of time for a change. And that is, again, Kiddush HaChodesh. Oh, let me make a general statement. Whenever we have in the Torah mitzvot that don't apply to us as individuals, like the korbanot, the sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash, like things that are in the domain of Sanhedrin, when we have a Sanhedrin, then the question is, how come we don't have our own Torah and rule book of the things that we need to know, and give the Sanhedrin its own operating manual, and give the Kohanim their manual, etc., etc.? The answer is, all mitzvot are commanded to all Jews, and every Jew has a part in every mitzvah, at least, and especially when it comes to mitzvot that don't apply at the moment, especially the learning about the mitzvah, the drawing of lessons from the mitzvah, and the application of the spirit of the mitzvah. Briefly, HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim, make a Jewish calendar, is in the domain of the Sanhedrin. But we, the people of Israel, are commanded to have a Jewish calendar. And therefore, what's in it for me and you is a question that we have to ask and answer. And part of it is we need to be attuned, plugged in to the way the Jewish calendar works. Ask someone, what's today's date? A fellow Jew, how many people will say March 31st? And then you'll have to say, no, I mean in the Jewish calendar, Tuesday is Rosh Chodesh, if they know that. That's part of a problem. Simply put, and that's all the time we have, know the Jewish calendar better, use the Jewish calendar, know your birthday on the Jewish calendar and your family's birthdays. Don't negate the secular calendar, but make the primary calendar on your mind and in your heart the Jewish calendar, because God gave it as a gift to us. HaChodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. It's for you. Accept the gift and enjoy it. On that note, I will wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.